To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Now we're recording.
How can you tell?
Because it's not flashing anymore.
Oh, okay.
And then I hit it again.
And then you play it back? Can you play it back on there?
Well, you have to have headphones.
Oh, okay.
All right, you've heard the song. You know who we are. I'm Don.
Oh, and I'm Al.
And today is Free Comic Book Day. So we're on our way to Yancey Street, way up in Atlanta.
No. Where is it in
Newport Richey?
Newport Richey or Port Richey?
Well, no, Newport Richey.
Or it's Port Richey Cunningham. But what are we?
I just said they heard the song. They know who we are.
Well, we always say, hey, we're Two Dimension Comic Book Podcast, a comic book podcast with no direction.
As we're showing right
and
now.
And if we don't say that, I don't feel whole. You know? I feel like only half. So.
All right. Well, Al said it, so you know who we are.
This is an on-the-road show, by the way.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy. And Dallas is planning on doing a show after we all met up at Yancey. But because of the baby, of course, he said, I can't do it. Well, so Al just suggested, let's do a road show. So, bear with us. Hopefully, there's no accident. And enjoy the road sounds.
Exactly. Enjoy all the cars driving by and the honking horns and... We'll talk about all the beautiful sights here, like the Walgreens, and I think up and coming are the porn stores coming up. I think those are lovely too.
Yeah, right. Lovely. Yeah, US 19. It's a beautiful
19.
Thing.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, you should all come down to Florida and experience it. It takes you out of it takes you from here out of Florida, right from St. Pete all the way to
it goes on a while
to Georgia or Alabama or. Mississippi or whatever, I know
it ends, well, to me it ends at Tallahassee, but okay. It must keep going up further.
It just changes name or something.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're here to talk about comics and not US 19, even though there are a few comic shops on US 19, including Yancey Street, which we will be going to, but that's about 45 minutes from here.
Yeah, it's
this is a long and winding road.
We're leaving St. Pete, and we go through
Springs.
Yeah, Dunedin, Tarpon Clearwater. Springs, Port Richey, and then into Newport Richey. Yeah, Clearwater, Largo, a lot of places.
A lot of places, a lot of people. It's all wonderful. So let's talk about comic books.
Okay, one thing I want to bring up. Now I lent it to you. Have you read The Autumn Lands? That I lent to?
I read a little bit of it. I haven't finished it yet.
What do you think?
I gotta finish reading it. I'm kind of like, I'm not like a big fan of anthropomorphics or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But the art's really nice. The story hasn't like sunk in yet, so I'm gonna have to like hold back on it before I talk about it. But you can.
All right, I will. Ronnie Frey, our friend. He posted on a Facebook page, and he said he loves anthropomorphic, you know, work. And he found that, I think he said he'd never heard of it. Well, I hadn't heard of it. I'd never seen it. It's an Image comic. Do you remember the writer?
No, I sure don't.
It was a writer that I've seen a lot of work from. But I think Dallas said on the Facebook page, I think it's Mark Waid, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think it's Mark Waid.
Okay, but, Dallas is saying he can write. Well, I've seen his work. But, I found the trade. I loved it. The artwork was fantastic all the way through. I loved how, every issue, he had a two-page spread. It looked like it was always different magazine spreads. You know, it was painted. And they were always kind of a different style. It was like a magazine article explaining what was getting ready to happen. But it's a world of basically human-like animals, and they all live together. and it's a world powered by magic. And you're following the point of view character is he's a dog, a boy.
Yeah, there's all sorts of critters in there.
But the boy, his father is one of the wizards, and his father takes him down to the lowlands. They're up in a floating city, which is kind of neat. And as the story starts going on, it starts showing things about how they light the city at night. You know, they do this and that. But him and his father go down to try to trade with the bison tribe. And the bison tribe are kind of more primitive. They don't have magic. And they're not treated very well. Anyway, it goes on, and they have a big council meeting. They have all these different, as Al calls, critters, but they're all head wizards from different areas. And they're all birds, turtles, you know, different kinds of animals. But they're meeting, talking about magic. And one thing they bring up is magic is going away. There's less and less of it. And they stress that throughout the story. And they keep talking about, who is it, the Eternal Warrior or the Infinite Warrior?
I remember the stuff about magic. I don't remember. I know they bring a warrior guy from, like, somewhere or another. And I think that's the first issue or the first two issues. Honestly, I don't really remember. Like I said, I read, like, a little bit of it. It's just kind of like, it was just there. I have to really sit down and reread it again. So, you're basically the one that's going to be, like, talking about this one.
This one wizard that brings, you know, this up, he suggested, or she suggests, she's a warthog. And she says, they're going to bring the warrior back. He was the warrior from the past, and I guess because of him, he saved the world, or the world went.
The world went,
however he created it. And so they're going to go back in the past and join. And they're saying it's not possible to do that. And then she explains how it could be. Well, then the head of the council says, no, absolutely not, and don't do it. Well, then some other wizards go to her, and they say, you know, she explains how they could do it, which is a crazy, you know, they explain how it would work. And one thing I like about this is with magic, I like stories about magic. I always loved Doctor Strange. I always like, you know, Dr. Fate. But after a while, I got kind of tired of them. Magic stories where you just, it's all out of the air, you know. I always liked it where basically there's a counter to it, like if you use magic you're drawing from something else and it can hurt it, you know, and it has physical realities to it. And in this one it did, you know, and they were explaining about the danger and what could happen. But anyway, in secret they go and bring the warrior back. And all through the story, everybody keeps arguing about the warrior was a dog, the warrior was an owl, you know, the warrior was, you know, whatever your tribe was from, that's what the warrior was. And so it's like a religious thing, how they remember it. And then a warrior brings back, and it's a surprise. I'm not going to spoil that. But there's all kinds of things that happen. The magic's gone, the city crashes down. And then all of a sudden the bisons show up. The bisons are pissed. And it's kind of interesting. Every once in a while they start explaining about how the animal thinking works. And I don't know. It was a series I really enjoyed. Before I was finished with the book, when I was getting close to the end, I was kind of disappointed that it was, you know, I was finishing it. So I looked it up to order the second trade right away. And it's not out. I'm really hoping the series didn't get canceled so I could find out more about what happened. But the artwork is just outstanding. That kind of work, it can be good, it can be bad, but this one, it just worked. Everything to me worked. It was kind of a Conan King Cole type work, and I loved it. And it's fairly recent. I think it was from 2014, 2015.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before you showed me the trade paperback. Like I said, I agree, it's beautifully drawn. I mean, the book looks great. It's just never, it didn't catch my attention the first time I read it. So it's like, I'll have to give it another go, but it looks worthwhile. I mean, you know, it's an interesting story. I mean, like I said, I can't really comment on it, so...
Oh, man, well, that's why I lent it to you.
I know, but I've been reading other things, though.
All right, well, let's hear some of those.
Well, I'm going to read... I'm going to talk about the complete 360 or whatever opposite of that, which is like... My friend was down here. He was talking about getting... He picked up a couple of those... Again, this is the complete opposite. At the supermarket, those little Archie Digests, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I go, oh, yeah, I'll check them out. So I went and got one the other day. Had five Harry Lucy stories, okay? I mean, I must have gotten a really good one. So I'm like, holy moly, man, this is great. I mean, it's got stories from every era, modern, middle period, or whatever. But it's got these cool old Harry Lucy stories. And a couple of them are ones that I remembered. And I'm like, I don't really like the format, which is like the little... You know, yeah. I would gladly pay more if it was a regular size comic book, but if that's all you got, that's all you got, you know? So I'm reading through these stories and I'm going like, this is what I miss about comic books. These books are deceptively simple. Okay, you can read a story in 3 minutes or whatever, but they're so well done.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a confection, you know, it's like a candy or a drink that just goes down smooth or well. So enjoyable were those stories that I'm like, man, and whenever I go to the supermarket, I look for them. Yesterday I went and I was disappointed they didn't have one. Apparently they put one out like every week or so. But it's like, oh my God, these are so much fun. I mean, I picked them up a few from that website, My Comic Shop or whatever, and I read them. But it's just like, I guess I must be a contrarian, because I'm going in the complete opposite direction. I'm just going toward pure simplicity. And it just feels good, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
No, exactly.
It feels like it takes me back to a simpler time. You know, when you read a very complex storyline, it becomes a good thing, but it's just like, I don't want to, I kind of want to go in the opposite direction. I don't know how to explain it, you know what I mean? I'm really a big fan of simplicity in work, but the problem is, or the good thing is, that in order for something that's simple to be good, it's got to be really, really good, you know what I mean? If it's just average simplicity, then it's like, it depends on what your point of view is, or your frame of mind, it's not really good. But man, these Harry Lucy stories, and Frank Doyle is the writer, you see, like, it's basically like a gag, but it's just like the expressions and the simplicity of line and the expressions of the characters or whatever, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
It really is perfect, you know, and you're going like, that's what I miss in a lot of the books today. Not all the books, I'm sure there are some good ones out there, that's what I miss. It's like the simplicity of, you know, of the economy of a story and the art and the power that it has, the way it gets to you, because it could be nostalgic, it could be like on an artistic level or whatever, but it's just like, it just hits home, you know. So I'm, you know, like I said, whenever I go to a supermarket, I go looking for them. Hopefully they have more than you know, one Lucy story, but there was a couple of pin-up pages by DiCarlo, and they were beautiful.
Yeah,
and you know what? The inker, Rudy LePic, he was awesome too.
Yes.
The thing about DiCarlo is like when you look at his work and you start studying it, you see these little subtle nuances in his work that, you know, at first you don't notice, but when you like take a look at it really or start drawing it or whatever, you go, wow, that's interesting. He went out of his way to do this, which gives it like some resonance to you, and you're like, wow, this guy's really like, you know. But unless you're really like paying attention to it, you just take it for granted. It's just there, but it's like everybody says, the attention to detail. Yeah, you definitely have it. So did Lucy too. Those guys to me are like the Kirby and what and Stan Lee or whatever you want to call it of Archie Comics. Never duplicated. And then, you know, when I talk about this stuff, it's like you also got to realize that these guys, which I didn't really know as a kid, but I do now from reading, morning, you know, looking at websites or whatever, and giving you more information and downloading old Golden Age books. These guys were they invented all this.
Yes.
Lucy was around in the 40s. DiCarlo started in the 50s. I mean, that's why these guys were so good. They invented it.
Yeah, and the guy that wrote most of those stories, I forgot.
Frank Doyle.
Yeah, Frank Doyle was awesome. And I knew Frank Doyle because they started, you know, giving these guys credits in the late 70s at Archie Comics. Mm-hmm. But I thought Frank Doyle was a young guy. And then when IDW started printing those Best of Dan DiCarlo, Best of Harry Lucy.
Best of Harry Lucy.
Yeah. His name was everywhere.
Yeah.
And I thought, dude, how many 4 to 8 page stories can you write? Or I guess 4 to 6 page stories. Most Archie Comics were 5 page stories. And they were fun, sometimes informative, but they really sucked you in.
They sure did. They were seductive, yeah.
And sometimes they'd even make statements about, you know, buying too much human, you know, society, how society thinks. And they weren't preachy. They were just fun. And that's one thing you're talking... By the way, Wilson's has a billion of those digests, but I
know. I'm going to start getting them, but Wilson's also a drive and a half, too. But yeah, I'm going to start grabbing them.
Sometimes you and I go there.
Yeah. But, well, the thing, too, is that, like, Chick Stone was an inker for Lucy. I didn't realize that.
I didn't either.
He did a few of the stories. And then, here's a real interesting one. There's an artist in one of the stories, which I knew about already, but I'm like, oh, cool. And he was an Archie guy from the, I think he did work in the 40s, late 40s through the 70s, early 70s, Bill Vigoda. And I'm going like, oh, yeah, I remember his art. But what I didn't realize was it was Abe Vigoda's brother. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And I recognize the artist, and I go, oh, yeah, it's that guy. I didn't see that many of his stories because he passed away in 73. But it was like, oh, man, that's cool. You know, Abe Vigoda's brother was an Archie dude. All right. You know,
now, explain to people who Abe Vigoda is.
Fish from Barney Miller, among other things. And he was in a lot of movies, too. But, you know, if you watch Barney Miller, he's the old crusty Boris Karloff-like looking... Fish character, detective from Barney Miller TV show, which was basically set in the detective's office for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, they repeat those now on Antenna TV, so occasionally I'll catch a few of them and then I'll fall asleep in the middle of it.
Well, in the late, I guess, 77, 78, he had a spinoff show called Fish.
Yep, I remember.
About him and his wife, and had a bunch of foster kids.
Yeah, I kind of remember.
Real New York show, and I watched it. But all I kept thinking was, God, this is depressing. Him and his wife just were kind of down.
Well, 70s had their moments, you know.
I remember we had a substitute teacher, and I was taking a commercial art class at a Votech school. And there was a substitute teacher that would show up in different classes regardless of what you took, and his last name was Fish. And every time he'd come in, I'd be walking down the hall, and the guys in the drafting architecture class or the printing class, they'd always laugh. You got Mr. Fish. Hey, Mr. Fish. And they'd always do the accents those kids had on the show.
Oh, God.
Abe Vigoda was also a voice on Batman the Animated Series. He played one of the mob guys in the early episodes when they used to have him. Can't remember the name of that guy. It was one of the mob bosses, and they had all these you know, plainclothes thugs. But he was one of the voices for a while.
Oh, okay, yeah, most people, he just passed away recently, he was in his 90s, but most people remember him from, recently from that Snickers commercial, I think, where he was playing football or something like that, I don't know, you don't remember, but he's like, he looks like, you know, he looks a little like Boris Karloff, he had those big black eyebrows or whatever, but yeah, his brother was an Archie guy, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool, but at least in these digests, excuse me, you're seeing the names of some of the people. You know, there was a guy called Dick Malmgren, who I remember his style, and Bill Vigoda, and who was it? There were some other guys too. I can't think of any other. Of course, Dan DiCarlo and Lucy, and they're newer guys. But I'm waiting for the ones. I'm sure they put them already. I have them collected on a file, and I actually bought a couple of them back in the 80s, but. Do you remember when Gene Colan worked for Archie?
Yeah, you and I have talked about it. I had heard that. I had seen him. And then when you and I did that episode 5, we talked about Archie Comics.
Yeah.
And I looked him up to post pictures on the blog, and it really made you realize just how dynamic Gene Cole was.
Yeah, he could do it. He could do anything.
But it didn't have the slickness that you usually have with Archie. It was, I appreciated the uniqueness of it, but it wasn't to me his forte.
No, but I thought, I'm going to be completely opposite. I thought he did a great job. I think his style lent itself to Archie. He was able to draw in the Archie style, but you could tell it was Gene Colan. It was it by Mike Esposito, too, so it was like, oh, my God, you know, back to Marvel Comics. I loved those stories. You know, actually, there's guys, newer guys, that do the work that are just way too cartoony that I really don't like.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like Colan could do anything. He was great at doing those Archie stories. It was, he only did it for like a couple of years, but there's like at least a couple hundred pages. You know, I wish they would like put them together as a volume or something like that, because I really enjoyed the hell out of it. And now people like Terry Austin work for them, and I know Milgram does work for them now, and got all sorts of people. So, I mean, I don't know if they're still doing it in the old Archie stuff, because I know now they have those new books that are drawn in a more like contemporary style. But
yeah,
do you know if they're still doing the old, you know, the old school?
You've asked me that. I don't know. On Facebook I see Archie stuff, and the new ones, it's always in that style, which I have to say is not bad, and I like the cover design. But they're reprinting a lot of the old stuff. I mean, it's always out there, so.
Yeah, that's a good gimmick that they have to buy the book. It's going to get an old reprint, because they had, the reprints were in the, Sabrina and Afterlife book, which I think they're starting those up again. I hope they're starting those back up again.
Yeah, you really enjoy those.
Yeah, they were different, you know, but they just took like a big leap. I think the writer was going to be working for a movie. He's doing an Archie movie or something, writing a script. I don't know. They've been gone for a while, but I'd like to see them come back. And that's the thing about books, too, nowadays. You know, they go away and you don't see them for a while, so you lose interest. And then, like with the Silver Surfer book that you were getting, it goes on a 15-issue run, and then it ends, and then it starts up again. Why? Why not just keep it going, you know, the same, you know, instead of issue 15 and then number one, issue 16. How about that, you know?
I know what you mean. As far as the Silver Surfer, that one, I didn't really understand, because it's still following the same storyline. But sometimes I kind of like the fact that if the creative team leaves, then they just redo the book with something else. I've always kind of liked that model. And I guess it's for the trades. But that's one thing I didn't like, is sometimes, going back to Alan Davis when he was drawing that Wolverine series, and three of the issues was drawn by another person. So it kind of, to me, messed.
That was just like it missed his deadline.
I don't think Alan Davis missed the deadline. I'm guessing he's really good about that, and when he takes on a project, he makes sure he's ahead of it. I think there was something else, but whatever the reason, that's an issue if the thing just goes on and the creative team changes. Sometimes there's no order to it. So,
I mean, the creative team is still the same on Silver Surfer.
Yes.
So, like I said, if 1 through 15 was Mike Allred, and then the next series is going to be like Chris Sam, yeah, I can see that, but it's still Mike Allred doing the voice.
Yeah, I have no idea why they changed that, because the storyline still goes on, but I'm guessing maybe Secret Wars had something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
maybe
read
they just renumbered
stuff.
Everything.
I'm guessing, to change the subject a little bit, I'm guessing you didn't see or have interest in going to see the new Captain America movie or Civil War or whatever.
No.
Okay, yeah, because I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday who's comic book fan when he was a kid, but now he goes to all those movies, and I was just telling him how ironic it is that, like, America, or a lot of people that didn't even care about books, go to see these movies like, oh my God, I gotta go see the next Marvel movie, like The Brand, I gotta go see The Brand, and I could care less, you know. I mean, I know, I still know people that are fans that still go see them anyway, so there's still that,
too.
But just mainstream America really takes to these movies.
Well,
and I just don't, because they screw everything up as far as I'm concerned.
No, for everything I hear, the movie's good. People like it. But, you know, it's down here in Florida, we have Universal Studios. We have amusement park at Universal Studios. We also have another one called Islands of Adventure. And they have a Marvel Comics land section, which is kind of neat. They have a Spider-Man ride. They had a Hulk roller coaster, which was awesome. And the Spider-Man ride was kind of amazing. But what got me was some guys I was in the Navy with, guys I worked with. They don't read comics, never really ever read comics. But they're walking around, they buy the Marvel Comics superhero t-shirts. And they go on about how much they love Marvel Comics. Well, they remember the cartoons, they remember, this is before all the movies started coming out. But you have memories and you like the characters, you just don't really want to collect the books. And that's how it always is. And to me, that's what the movies have kind of turned into.
Yeah, well, I mean, when my friend was talking about it, he goes, yeah, you gotta wait at the end for the trailer, and, you know, I want to... He goes, like, I couldn't wait to see the Stan Lee cameo or whatever. You know, it's funny how people, like, pick up on, like, you know, it's like they pick up on he was saying, oh, I can't wait the whole movie. And finally, Stan Lee, that was, like, one of my favorite parts of the movie. So it just kind of, like, shows you how they're hitting on different cylinders from everybody. You know, they have all sorts of appeal. So the fan people go there, the regular people go there, you know, and they're becoming big blockbusters, but they just leave me cold. I think the one that really angered me, even though it was a decent movie, was the Captain America, the way they rewrote the Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos thing, and they just tiptoed across the whole Nazi thing, because apparently they didn't want to offend, or I should say, lose money in Germany. So they they were playing it safe a little bit, which is kind of like, give me a break. Give me a break, you know what I mean? Just do the story and deal with it. But, you know, when big bucks are involved and it's Disney and all that, then, you know, you don't want to... I understand things. But the Avengers was, I saw on Netflix, that was fine. I didn't see the second Avengers movie or Thor or anything, but... Eh, whatever, man. You know, if the people like it, the people like it, great, but... supposedly like a really good movie, so maybe
I hear people.
I'm sure Dallas will probably see it and Rook will see it, so we'll have a show to talk about it or something like that. So hey, let's take a music break or something.
It's only 20 minutes, dude.
Really? I don't even know, because I'm not looking at the time thing, so I don't even know how much time has gone
by. One thing, and we'll go to the music break. One thing I want to bring up is what you're talking about. It goes back to what you said about the Archie comics, is I like all kinds of comics, but a lot of people kind of miss the sense of wonder, the fantastic comic books used to give you. And now, a lot of the times, you talk about comic coloring, there's a guy that took, it's controversy all over the internet, but Frank Miller is doing that Dark Knight 3, and people are complaining about how Frank Miller's drawing now. You know, I guess he's doing the covers, but it's gotten kind of...
What is he doing? I don't know. I haven't seen him.
He's done the covers for him. But one thing, this one artist is pretty good. He recolored the covers. And one thing he's complaining about is, you know how I always talk about comic coloring now? They're using photographic type colors and dark colors and heavily rendered and, you know, a lot of gradients and stuff. Which can be good. Sometimes it can be overcolored, though. And what he was saying with Frank Miller's work, it should be flat, bright colors. And he took some of those colors, and they showed them side by side, the way DC's coloring them, which is good coloring. But to me, it's just too heavy-handed and too, too grim and gritty. And his are kind of graphic and stark, and it actually kind of goes a little more like how the original Dark Knight Returns was done. But, anyway, I guess a lot of other artists and people were complaining about taking it upon yourself to saying you're better, which I don't think he meant that at all. But that's, I'm not wanting comics to step back the way it used to be all the time, but I do miss the sense of wonder. And of all things, I was listening to an interview with Bob Ezrin, you know, that,
Producer. The producer for Kiss and Cooper.
Well, that's, they played parts of Kiss Destroyer. And they were talking about it, that they said, the interviewer was saying, you know, I don't mean to sound derogatory or anything, but when I listen to that, I hear a comic book.
And is that what listens to what, Kiss?
Huh?
When somebody said when they listen to what, they see
it. Well, when they listen to Kiss Destroyer.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And Bob Ezrin said that's not derogatory. He says that's what the band wanted to sound like. They were huge comic book fans. They were huge, you know, stuff that we like. Japanese movies, you know, B-movies, all that stuff. And he said they had, you know, they were rock and roll, but there was, with everything they did, there was a sense of fun. And everything in that band was, you know, a sense of fun. Even though they were painted up like demons and spit blood and breath fire.
I was one of them.
Yeah, it was awesome. But, he was talking about, he brought, this is an old interview, and they were talking about that Broadway play, Spider-Man, Are You Afraid of the Dark? And he says, I think that was a mistake what they did. They should have done it like Kiss Destroyer and had a fun and a sense of wonder to it. Instead, I guess they made it threatening and scary, you know, which is, again, after Dark Knight and Watchmen is how comics have kind of gone to. But you need flat colors. A sense of wonder.
It all depends on the whatchamacallit, the chemistry of the book. You know, I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I don't know. I haven't seen those Frank Miller covers. I'll have to take a look at them. I didn't know he was still drawing.
He's drawing the covers for some of them. Other people are drawing those books. That guy, Greg Capullo, is that the one?
Yeah, Greg Capullo, I know that.
I think he's drawing, but I think other people are doing stuff as well. And he's not just writing it. There's I can't think of the other man's name. There's another writer that's writing a lot of this. I don't really know how it works. I haven't read them. But the covers that they have Wonder Woman with a baby on her back. They have old grizzled Batman on one of them.
So the variant covers.
I'm guessing they're very colorful.
Yeah, probably.
But Frank Miller drew them. To me, the Wonder Woman looks kind of neat, and I've heard people make comments about Wonder Woman and Cub, you know, for Lone Wolf and Cub. But he makes her look like an ancient Greek, which is kind
of
cool.
I'm just glad the guy's still, you know, alive. I heard he was very sick, and I saw pictures of him recently, and it looked really bad. But, I mean, I'm glad that he's around and he's still doing comic books. Whether I like him or not, it's a different story.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I haven't really cared for his new work, but I don't hate on it like everybody else. I just don't get it.
Yeah, well, I understand. I mean, he's got a nice graphic style, and I understand what he did. I mean, you know, him and Alan Moore did in the 80s, and others too. I shouldn't just single out those two, but like I said, you know, I still like his work. I like lighter work. I love the horror stuff, but I like the lighter work, man. It's just like, it's called comics. It's not called, I mean, when you change the name from comics to graphic novel, it sounds pretentious. I like it comic books.
That's what Paul Chris says. He says it's not anything but comic books.
Yeah.
But, and I do agree with that. And I do think that it should be a vast array of a lot of stuff.
Why not? Why the hell not?
But one issue is if something's popular, then everybody jumps on the boat.
Yeah, and plus, these days, back then, comics, whether it was good or not good, it was kind of a closed circle or whatever you want to call it. It was like, yeah, you have Marvel and DC, but it was like the same guys doing them. Now it's like everybody and his brother does a comic book, and that's great, but it leads to a lot of, same with music too, it leads to a lot of stuff, but the good stuff sometimes gets just buried somewhere, you know what I mean? Unless you happen to get lucky to pick it up, or it gets a review, or you hear about it somewhere, it gets really buried in between all the stuff that's, depending on your point of view, may not be the good stuff. Whereas back then, even though you did have a lot of comic books, if you were a boy, if you were a young kid, you're basically going to stick with Marvel and DC. You know, for the most part, in the 60s, in the mid-60s, later 60s. I mean, sure, there was Dell, there was Archie. We all picked up on those Tower comics, you know, whatever, Harvey. But, you know, you knew where you were going to go. Now it's just like you go to the comic shop, which we're almost at, and it's like a cluster of, like, you know, which is great. I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to put it down, but it can be tough to decide what you're going to get, especially now when you go to these places and the comic books are sealed and there's variant covers all over the place, and you know if the guy who wrote the comic book, drew the comic book, is the guy who drew the comic book on the intake. You know, we talked about this before. That does really bother me. Because I'll see a great cover, and then it's like, oh, I don't like this art. And unlike, I mean, I must be, again, I must be in the contrarian, because I don't buy a comic book for a writer. Never have, never will.
You know, you and I both, Alan Moore was one exception. And also, I have to admit now, is Robinson. The guy.
James Robinson.
Yeah, James Robinson, okay. Starman comic. You know, I've been told it was good by several people. I started reading him. And I do like Tony Harris. He does exactly what he needs to do. He's a good artist. He puts a lot into it. And I do like it.
Is he a writer?
No, he's the artist, though.
You're talking about the team.
The Starman comic.
Yeah.
What makes it neat, when Tony Harris left and they got other artists, I never minded when I've been pulling these out of the back issues. And none of these artists are artists that I would buy their work from if it was just the art. I mean, art's good, it's just not to my taste. But I love those stories, and this is the one comic book, the one exception besides Alan Moore, where I'd buy the work for the writer. So,
yeah.
Anyway, on that, we're almost there. We're going to be taking a break.
Let's come back after the, part two should be after the... The free comic book extravaganza.
And there you go.
I'm thinking you every time, man.
Okay, wait a minute. What do you got there?
See,
I was kind of trying to glance at his, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, see, he's got all this, like, new stuff. Man, you picked up some great classics here.
Yeah, I always wanted that comic book, so I'll get it now.
You know.
That's one thing I wanted to ask you. Do you still read comics at all?
I do, but because what's happened is I have no place to store individuals. I mean, I've got like 4 boxes of them, but just leftovers from the store.
Yeah.
But I'm more into trade paperbacks now. Wait till the whole story comes out, and then I'll just...
But you do. See, that's it. That's what I'm going to ask, because I know you still have an interest in it, because you were here. And I remember when I met you, you were talking about going down to St. Pete to another store. But I was just curious if you still read them or if it was just a past thing.
No, I do. My problem is that they're changing things every, like, 3 years, and it's like...
That's what Al says. You know, you're talking about new stuff. Look at what you got.
Well, this is all stuff free.
That's free. So, yeah, but look, I got the check.
The Phantom.
I didn't know they had that.
And I got Phantom.
Do you mind if
no,
I...
No, go ahead.
I didn't look. They have a Pink Panther, and it has an old gold key story in it.
Oh, I got to go look over there. I don't know. Too many people.
I'm gonna go back and get the. I just got 2.
Well, you can get 4 now.
Oh, they
can.
I didn't. Yeah. See
you can, no, he was saying.
That's what they said.
Even though they're free, you're limited.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Because there's just so many people that.
I've heard one store only let you get 1, but you have to buy something.
You know, which is stupid because.
Yeah, well, they do that because people
come. It was kind of funny. There's a lady that was asking. I don't know if Colossal was Colossal Comics.
I don't know, because Bruce
eats it.
And we went to it, they had $5 trades.
You look good.
Yeah, he do look good.
I keep looking at you, because the makeup is really good.
Thank you.
I'll follow you. But we drove by, and I told Alan, it doesn't look like it's open. But maybe it is. It was an odd store.
I mean, it was. But they changed hands a couple of times. So.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
The last time we went, it was all young people, and I don't think it was that one guy that was smoking in the store all the time.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember the guy that looked like an older guy.
Yeah,
he was
terrible.
Well, I remember when that store started out in a renovated somewhat gas station. The person that his dad owned. I used to go up there and buy stuff, but his dad couldn't figure out how to give you 10% off your books, and so I used to say, Ward,
it's a dollar.
If I got $10 worth of stuff,
take a
dollar off, okay? and he tried to do me deals, and I go, Ward, the stuff's already on sale. I already got a fixed price on this. I mean, so don't be trying to do me any deals.
Hey, they're half off. I mean, why not?
Hey, no, I
remember that phone.
Yeah?
I remember seeing it used in a place I never got. I figured $5, I'll get it.
You know, what I like is I walk through here and I go, I bought that brand new office.
Right.
I bought that brand new
office. Oh, yeah.
And I remember my son going, Dad, those are all 12 cents a piece. And I go,
yeah, that's right.
Two well, that was the time. Yeah.
The spin, and I told him, I said, I originally started at the very tail end of 10 cents off. I used to get a dollar, and that was before sales tax. But then when they went to 12, suddenly I had to eliminate somebody. So Jimmy Olsen or Lois Lane got.
That's right.
That's what you said before. He dropped in before.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew this, but you're on the show right now.
Are you recording us?
Yeah. This is Jim Johnson, if you remember from a really popular couple of episodes. As Al introduced him, Don Heck's biggest fan.
Yeah, well, when you see Don Heckark, you go, what the heck is this crap?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always felt that way, but his earlier work I tend to like a lot now. I had seen that when I was a kid.
Yeah. So you hijacked us, huh?
Yeah. He'd never survive in today's environment.
Yeah. Oh, and here's our friend Rook Murphy.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?
Just to let you know, he is recording us for a podcast.
Oh, nice.
He didn't tell us until like
I didn't know. I didn't record all of it, but I saw it was recording, so I was all right. We're here with Jim.
We didn't know either. We said all sorts of things.
I just texted you. I was like, Don, you're 7 foot tall. How can I not find you?
He's hiding behind the spinner rack.
Well Jim Zora was covering me up.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, there you are. 7 foot tall. Why can't I find you? Is Chris here today?
Yeah, Chris is wandering around with a bunch of his
son's
friends.
Working here. Chris is working here.
Sometimes. We'll see.
He's got to get... Now, does he work for money or books?
Money.
See, when people work for me, they work for books.
Yeah, pretty much it depends on what he sees while he's during his shift while he's working here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's walked out of here with a lot less money than he was supposed to a couple times.
Well, it was cheaper for me because I knew what my cost factor was, and I said, okay, because their pay was based off of retail.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
So is the other guy here, you know, little Dallas?
Dallas?
I have not heard from him yet.
Well, he'll be, but
running late.
You know why. I mean, babies take off.
Babies definitely got running behind. So.
Babies take a lot of work.
Yeah, that's understandable.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is our special live free comic book day segment, and we're recording on our new little digital recorder. We're in the mall right near Yancey Street Comics right now. We thought we'd throw
the hidden gazebo.
That's right. We're in this sweet little hidden gazebo. That's right. With me, we've got Don, Rook, Al, myself, and Jim.
Johnson.
Jim Johnson. That's right. So what's up, guys? Everybody enjoying Free Comic Day?
Yeah. It's been awesome.
It's great right now. There's so many people running around. The store's packed. Unfortunately, I missed out on one of the books that I was planning on buying because the girls told me somebody picked it up last night.
What book was it?
It was Private Eye, same guy that worked on Why the Last Man and several other books that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
It was apparently a digital comic that was never meant to be printed, and it ended up getting printed. So I was really looking forward to picking it up. Unfortunately, somebody beat me to it.
Have you read it before?
Never read it. Never read it.
Can they get you another one?
Oh yeah, they already said they're going to order me another one.
Why didn't you just download it the digital form and print it out?
Because here, I'll show you.
Oh, take
a look at
it. Out, that'll be cheap.
If you take a look at the how it's printed sideways like that,
yeah.
And I just think it would look so cool on my shelf.
That's
nice. It really looks like a cool art piece. So, but it's Brian Vaughn that wrote it. So you know it's going to be good.
No, I kind of want to get it.
Right.
I know.
Is it Don Heckart?
That would be the perfect comic book for you. Don Heckart. There's got to be one.
One thing I wanted to bring up was this is Free Comic Day. Last year at Free Comic Day, we met Jim Johnson. Dallas and Rook used to go to Jim Johnson's store back in the 80s?
80s, early 90s.
What was the name of the store?
Comics and Games. Actually, it was originally Comics and Fantasy, but that's a separate story that I'm not sure you want on your podcast.
I used to call it, changed it to Comics
well,
and Games.
Well, you told me to go ahead and see it. This is an adult show.
Okay, well, I got a phone call, asking if I was looking to hire anyone, and I said, no, not at the moment, and she continued on, and I said, no, I've got enough staff people here right now, and she said, and then there was a pause in the conversation, and I said, what exactly do you think you're calling? And she goes, isn't this a strip club? And I said, why do you say that? She goes, well, I thought maybe you were it's comics and fantasy, so I thought you had comedians and strippers. So I immediately, 2 days later, took the sign down and had a friend of mine repaint it to Comics and Games.
See, I never would have thought of that.
Well, the fantasy part was for role-playing games.
Exactly.
I sold a lot of Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, exactly, and that's
like
what I put fantasy with, the Lord of the Rings kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah. She was a stripper, so I guess...
that makes sense.
Her nickname...
Lord of the Rings.
Her name was... Her stage name was Gandalf. No, I remember Rook and I used to go to Comics and Games / Comics Fantasy every week, and so every Friday... When New Comic Day rolled around, I would call Jim up to see what books I got, and he would always answer Comics and Fantasy. And I remember the one day you answered and said Comics and Games, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, do I have the wrong number? It threw me off a little bit.
Well, with all this cosplay going on, comics and strippers is kind of like, well, what's in now, you know?
Okay,
I mean,
now, we're really stretching it here on this one now.
Because, you missed out a great opportunity.
Because otherwise you get Scarlet Witch back over here.
Yeah. You know, you said, here, there's a lot of people dressed up, and there's stores, and this isn't a mall, and there's a lot of people outside, and there was, Jim had mentioned there was a woman dressed as Scarlet Witch, and it was really nice. It is really nice, but she's with the roller derby group.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we went out there.
She's with Revolution Roller Derby. It's all throughout the Tampa Bay area. One of the crews is actually based right out of Astroskate in Tarpon Springs.
RevolutionRollerDerby.com.
Yeah, she was out passing cards out. She passed one out, and I thought, wow. But, I mean, it was a really neat costume. But they had several other ladies from the group.
We're going to try and get some shots of some of the cosplayers today so we can post them on the blog. There's some great ones. You saw an Iron Fist, a Captain America.
Joker.
Okay,
Well, and
Captain
also,
America was a little...
Yeah, a little portly.
I can't talk.
It's all right.
But then not everybody can be Chris Evans.
Also, make sure you check us out on YouTube. That's right. We have a YouTube channel now, and you're going to see some video from the day, from Free Comic Book Day, parts of the cosplay contest, a walk through the artist alleyway that everybody's sitting down, signing, drawing, everything like that. So be sure to check us out on the YouTube. I'm sure Don will have that link.
You guys have expanded your media empire.
Yes, and a big thank you, everyone, to Rook for putting the YouTube page together, getting some video of us. You know, our beautiful mugs are going to be on video now.
Are you going to be doing live streaming of the podcast?
Hopefully in the future, we will.
We're going to attempt that. We were going to try and do some live streaming today. It doesn't
that means
exactly
we have to
work how we thought it would.
That means we have to wear pants, though, when we start recording from now on.
Oh, God.
But no, we're still going to have the regular show. This is an extension of it. And weren't you guys on the video? It's going to be some video game as well?
We're working on some different ideas for that. Yeah. So there's going to be some neat things coming to the YouTube channel. So
yeah,
you know,
coming soon.
Everybody check it out and keep your eye on it.
But this is going to keep you guys off the regular show.
New.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm going to do a part. No, can't. We're doing the video game thing.
New.
It's
like
happen.
A new
absolutely
Avenger
not
lineup.
This is just an expansion. Expansion of Two Dimensions. So this isn't going to exclude anybody. It's just going to be new add-on for everybody to check out.
Now, Al, we haven't heard much from you. What are you? You know, you're hiding over there.
Well, I'm getting ready to get my nails done over at Cali Pro Nails. So I'll be back in a few minutes.
I think that used to be a tattoo place.
Oh, really?
No, okay. The tattoo place is over by the food court.
Oh.
Would you rather have your nails or a tattoo?
Nails.
Don is holding this recorder like a journalist, and he's like moving it in front of his mouth and asking a question, and then putting the recorder in front of Al's face.
We got a different recorder, and I can't hook an external mic up to it, and I'm not sure how it's going to work. So I'm really amateuring this thing out all over the place.
Yeah.
So
well, one thing I did notice in there was the diversity in the age.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, naturally, you're going to have young little kids there because they want comic books. But I mean, the you got old people like me and
all the way
a couple
down
other
to
people
me.
Here. But I won't mention who. Which
all the way down
there.
To a 3-week-old, which is my daughter, which was here for a few minutes.
that was sweet. Absolutely, it was absolutely beautiful.
Yep. No, and we even got Billy back in town right now for Free Comic Book Day with his newborn daughter.
That's right, Hash Browns AKA and the whole, AKA Hash Browns, back with the fam, with his lady and his little girl.
And no offense, Dallas, but right now Billy's daughter could take your daughter. I looked at her size wise; it would be a fight.
She's twice my girl's age. Yeah.
Wolverine's a little rough, and you don't want to.
That's right.
Well, they were both sleeping, so I don't know about their fighting prowess, but just size wise,
my daughter's the best there is at what she does.
sleeping. That was a good answer.
Pooping.
What she does isn't pretty.
Well, you were talking about the ages and stuff. That's one thing I like about Yancey's. They have that kids section in the front. And when I came in there, I always looked through there, and there was all these parents with their kids, and the kids were excited picking out certain books. And this one girl, she had several, and he said, "They have Cora. Do you want to get that? You know, from the Nickelodeon show." Yeah, and then she kept pointing this other one. "You're not getting that one." I looked over and said, "I wonder what book that is." I didn't recognize it, but it's an all-ages book, but the father would not let her get it. But I like how they had it set up, and it's not like some comic stores. You go in there, and it's just a bunch of, adult books, Killing Joke and stuff, and people bring their kids. What's going on here? I mean, this one, it had something for everybody. And
you're right. It's very family-friendly. Right when you walk in, there's a big section with the kids' books, and I like that it's the kids don't have to go deep in and too far in to find their books. They don't have to walk around and see all the other books on the shelf.
But they will eventually because they have to be with their parents, right?
Well, yeah.
It's a family.
But then out in the mall, there was a teenage girl, and her parents were walking by, and the girl came back. "They're giving away free comics. They're giving away free comics." And so they went to the store. The girl never read it, but she was excited about free comics.
True, sorry.
This is how it should be.
Well, you know what? The nice thing about Free Comic Day was that it was designed to bring in people that probably never have ever read or stopped reading.
Haven't read in a while.
You know, let's see what's new, what's exciting, and stuff like that. And I remember when they first came out, didn't they used to be like whole comics? And now I paced through a few of them, and they're more like previews for...
Like 12 or 16-page books. Depending on what you grab, some of them are preview books. Some of them are actual continuity storyline books. They've got the Captain America 75, which is actually a history piece. It's a nice magazine-sized piece, which is just like the last 75 years of Cap. Kind of just since, Civil War came out Friday. They're just kind of pushing that out there, so familiarize people a little more with Captain America. And then, like I said, they've got their continuity pieces, and then they got their fun little pieces for the kids. They're just one-off books. So all depends on what you grab. Really.
I mean, I picked up the Tick.
Yeah.
Tick.
Yeah.
And, nice. And then there's also Rom Space Knight.
I saw that and I went, I didn't like that when it came out. Why would I pick it up today?
Yeah, but Rook and I were the sweet eight. Perfect age, I'm sorry, for Rom Space Knight back in the 80s. So it hit with us, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about the fact that there's a Love and Rockets sitting on the table for Free Comic Book Day.
I got it. You got it?
Hernandez.
Don't worry, Dallas.
I have the original
copy for you.
I do, too. That's my favorite. Did you get it?
He did not.
Rook grabbed me
a copy. Just found out, but I grabbed him a copy.
Jim and I ran comic shops. They didn't have Free Comic Book Day.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Just Friday.
No,
just if you stole them, it was Free Comic Book Day.
The book you got, was it a regular issue, or was it new stuff? Was it the Tick? Was it reprints, or?
No, well, I couldn't tell. I just kind of glanced through it because, it's like being at the all-you-can-eat buffet. People kind of pushing you along, trying to hurry you up.
The flow.
But I did get the Phantom. That looked like it was a full-length comic, and...
Sometimes I got a book a few years ago from Free Comic Day called Here Come the Strangers, and I never heard of it before, and I bought it, and it was the first issue, and it was a six issue series, but I never heard of it, and I told my store I want this, so I subscribed, but it was the complete first issue. Some of these, though, are just done specially for Comic Book Day. Sometimes they're just a character design book, and sometimes they're just a little catalog of what you can get. I mean, it's all different.
Oh, hell. Are we supposed to be? Oh.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Here we are talking.
Should we wave?
Everybody wave.
Hello.
Wave.
Hello. Get Al in the picture.
Here.
The mysterious Al. Anybody else have anything to say?
Yeah, let's get back to the books. Let's go back to the party and hang out.
One last thing. Look, Yancey Street has always been great for Free Comic Day, and this year they had 50% off back issues, 35% off everything else in the store. So, you know, next year, if you guys didn't make it this year, you should definitely come out because they put on a great event. There's a lot of artists. You can get a lot of signing, commissioned art. There's, like I said, a lot of deals. And there's some awesome costume contests. So make it out next year, guys.
Right. Have you guys ever been to their Tampa store?
No, it's an
old one.
We're
looking for it one day.
I thought it was Tampa.
They're doing a bunch of stuff over there today as well. So.
But it's Oldsmar is where it's at. It's not actually Tampa.
Yeah, it's actually in Oldsmar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it would have been nice to know. Al and I went to Tampa one time, drove. Yeah, we found an awesome store called Nerd Out Comics.
With Grindhouse Video next door.
Yeah, it's so awesome. Anyway, that'll be it. Thank you. And thanks, Jim Johnson.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
And we're back. I'm Don.
I'm Al.
And we just finished Free Comic Day. You just heard, hopefully, it came out. We recorded them all. And we're on our way back to the lovely St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yeah, we just had Jim Johnson, Dallas, and Rook, and Hash Browns was on there too, right?
No.
We didn't get Hash Browns?
Well, Hash Browns was there, but he wasn't on. Had his baby. We talked about this. We're not really sure. We never done it on location like this. So I don't know if the one part we did in the mall is going to come out.
We hope.
If you're hearing this, then you know we didn't play a music break. And that's why. Anyway, what did you get, man?
A lot of stuff. It had, like, of course, the free comics. Well, let's start off with the free comics. There's a bunch of stuff here. When I got there, there's a lot of stuff gone, but I did manage to get a Bruce Lee comic book, which is kind of fun. Considering we're going to be doing a Kung Fu radio show, me and Mao.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's gonna, I think the name's going to be Kung Fu Theater Music Review, or Kung Fu Movie Review, something like that. We don't know the exact name. It's going to be on Radio St. Pete.com. I think next week is our first show. We're going to watch Kung Fu movies or action movies or martial arts, whatever you want to call it, and review them, and it should be cool. So,
is it going to be available as a podcast as well?
I think it's just going to be over the air. I don't know if we're going to do it as a podcast. Maybe. It depends on, you know, Mark. We could, but for now, it's just going to be, you know, on Radio St. Pete, so you'll get it. You can get it on, you can go online and find it.
Well, how do you find Radio St. Pete?
Just type in RadioSt.Pete.com, and then if you missed the show live, there's an archive section, and you can just go through the archives and see. Well, we do the Indie Circuit, which was an independent music show, and those are all archived, so you can go get any episode from the past and click on it. So what you're going to do is wait like a week or so and then go on Radio St. Pete, go to the archive section, look for Kung Fu Movie Review or Kung Fu Theater, whatever it's called, and click on it and you'll be able to hear our show. We don't know exactly what time it's going to be on because this is all like brand new. So the best thing to do is just go to the archive section. But at any rate, I got the Bruce Lee book. Thanks to you, I got this Phantom book, which is reprints of the Phantom. I think Jim Aparo was one of these. Yep, Jim Aparo.
Yeah, it looked nice.
He did a great, great, great version of the Phantom back then. I got this nice Lovin' Rockets, which, unbelievable, there was plenty of there, which is surprising. And I picked up this Archie one just because it's fun. It's the new Archie, but it looks good. And then thanks to you, you got me the new Creepy. Issue 23.
Which wasn't a Free Comic Book Day comic.
It was not. No, the Flash Gordon, which you got for me, which
from
you had
Dynamite,
doubles.
Yeah, which is a great series we talked about ad nauseum.
Weird Love from IDW, which is...
Number 12.
Number 12, reprints of old romance books. I think this cover looks like... I don't know who did it. It looks a little bit like Nick Carty, but I could be wrong, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it does look like Nick Carty.
And then... At the store, everything, all the back issues were half price, so I got Justice League of America number 110, a giant size. It's funny, the guy who runs the place, one of the guys looked at it and goes, wow, this is in really good shape for like $5. And it's like, it was 10, not 5. I go, yeah, that's why I got it, man. A couple of issues of Tales of Suspense that I remember not having as a kid, but, you know, I wanted them. So
now, the Tales of Suspense, is that the horror title? Is that... That's the later one.
That's the Iron Man. That's the old one. That's Iron Man and Captain America from the 60s. So I got 81 and 82, $5 each. I got an issue of Thor, which is Kirby inked by, at least the cover anyway, inked by Everett, which is cool.
Yeah,
and then
nice
just for fun, Giant Size Werewolf by Night. I was hoping it was the Tigra issue, but it's not. But he fights Frankenstein, so.
Well, the Tigra awesome. Issue was Giant Size Creatures, number one.
Oh, it was Giant Size Creature because it was the
Featuring
werewolf.
Featuring Werewolf by Night. Yeah.
Oh, but hey, $10, half price, $5. Why the hell not?
Yeah, so, those are nice.
They're fun books. So, yeah, man, a big haul today. A lot of comic books.
Yeah, Yancey Street, what they did was for Free Comic Day, most stores, they have a section of free comics. And it's what the publisher put out. And usually you go to stores, you get three. I've heard of some stores that would only give you one, but you have to buy something. But Yancey always gives you four copies. And everything in the store was 35% off. And back issues in the long boxes were 50% off. Val saw that. He started box diving, which is nice.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really sweet. And outside in the mall, they had like a mini convention. They had a whole artist alley out there.
Yep, yep. Graham Nolan was there.
Hash Browns brought a print. Who did he buy the print from? Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember the guy's name, but it was nice. It was real nice.
And,
Chuck Dixon was there. Graham Nolan.
There was a woman. I recognized her name. Was it Amanda Connor?
I didn't see her there.
I don't know. Was she there? I thought it was a woman. I saw Chris had a bunch of those little tiny prints she did. They were not prints. They were artwork. I saw a headshot of the Rocketeer. They were like postcard size.
I didn't see her, but I could.
But
missed her.
Chris was on the floor with his friends out in the mall talking, and he was covered in those things. And I looked, but the Rocketeer said $20. I said, man, he got a lot of them for that price.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. It's a pretty good. It's a pretty good sized store. There's a lot of people in there. A lot of people, but it thinned out a little bit. But they're having a costume contest, so I'm sure a lot more people will be showing up in costume. There was a few cosplayers, not as many as I expected, but yeah, the day is young. But the comic books are running out though, so. People are definitely, like, grabbing them.
Well, the Phantom, they had two stacks of the Phantom when I first went there.
Yeah, man, that one went fast.
Well, I looked at it, and I wasn't going to get it. I saw people look. I picked it up, looked through it, and put it back down. And I'd gotten two books. I really wanted the Love and Rockets book, and I didn't think they would carry it. I read about it online on Facebook. And I got that one, and I got another book I was kind of interested in. And then I was talking to Jim Johnson. He had the Phantom. I said, it does look good. So I went back and grabbed it. And every time I went, there was people pulling that. And
yeah, I'm really surprised that that one was a big,
when
big seller. So
when you got there, they were out.
Yeah.
And but you pulled a book that I had seen on Facebook that I was kind of interested in. So you and I traded.
yeah, the drawn and quarterly book.
Yeah, I'd seen parts of that online, and I didn't realize they had that. But the Phantom book looked good, and I've always liked the Phantom.
Yeah, Jim Aparo Phantom, yeah, from the 60s, yeah, good stuff.
You know, we started doing the show, Jean Wallace, our friend, she had a bunch of Phantom comic books. It was kind of interesting.
She did, from the 60s?
No, they were from Australia. The Phantom is huge in Australia. I heard some guy on some podcast talking about it, that somehow they got a publishing deal. I can't tell you the whole story of it, but it's in the paper, and they have a Phantom comic books and a Phantom magazine. And I guess what surprised me was the array of artists they had. They had a lot of European, Spanish artists doing stories, and they were worn quality.
And, the Europeans love all those old books, man.
But those books were neat. And, I mean, sometimes they'd have old, you know, the old newspaper strips reformatted to fit a comic book. But the books were neat because when you'd open them up, the guy would say, oh, we got something good for you. You know, it was kind of like a club. You know, he was finding books and he'd tell you the history and who did it and when it came out. And, you know, it was like a movie channel documentary.
Yeah, I always used to get, like, in the quarter piles years ago, they would have, like, some foreign comic book that somebody, you know, just got rid of. And I thought those were the coolest ones because, like, the names were funny, like, Le Incroyable Devil or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it would have different kind of printing, but occasionally they would have new stories by whoever the artist was. And it was kind of cool because you're like, hey, wait a minute, I remember this story. And then sometimes they would, some guys would like re-ink, you know, Kirby or whatever, because maybe the repro they had was bad. So it was always an interesting deal. When we were at Nerd Out Comics, they had one in the boxes there for $5. And I was really tempted, but I was like, well, maybe, I'm sure it'll be there next time. I always say that. And then if it is, I'll have to buy it. But if it's not, I'm cool. But I used to love all those. I have a Conan one. This is like, it's like a trade. It's like a little trade from France with a bunch of Barry Smith stories in black and white. So I was like, oh, man, these are so cool.
Those are fun. Sometimes on Facebook, for a while, they were posting French editions of the Fantastic Four. You know, the Jack Kirby, Stan Lee work.
Yeah.
And what was neat was they were two-tone. Like, it'd be black and blue. And, you know, they'd have blue screened in all through it, or black and orange, or black and yellow, black and green. It made a neat look. Because, son, you know, those comics were made for color. And
sure.
I like to see the black and white art. It gives you a different dimension. But sometimes, some black and white comics, like, when Michael Golden did that Spartan X comic about Jackie Chan, those were nice. And they were done for Tops, and they were done in color. And then later, I guess with Image, they reprinted them in black and white. And it's nice. It shows off his artwork. But I wish they would have had some
shading.
Yeah, some gray shading or something, and just to give a little depth, because it was a lot of stuff. Which, again, it's beautiful stuff. But,
well, that's an interesting topic, which we may have discussed before. But when you draw for a black and white book, obviously you're gonna have to put more into it because it's got to pop. But when you're drawing for a four color book, it's all about the action and the power and the line work. You don't have to put that much, you know, shading into it, unless you're Mike Mignola, because, you want color. You want to open area for color. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's it. You open some area up for color. But that can blow up in your face. Alan Davis,
yeah,
he always worked in black and white in England. I'm told most British comics are in black and white, the ones I've seen. And, but when he came to the United States, he was doing a Batman and the Outsiders for DC Comics. And I liked them. But the first issues were a little too open, like a coloring book. And in an interview, Alan Davis is talking about it. He says, well, that was something I wasn't really, that was my mistake. He says, I was trying to leave the artwork open for the colorist. And he says, but I didn't realize just how open it was. And, I mean, you do work a little bit differently, but he started adding a little bit more detail and stuff he normally did. The Hernandez brothers have always worked in black and white, with a few exceptions. But I've seen some of those black and white stories colored. I really liked them. Now, when the few times they've done something just for color, I noticed they've opened it up a lot more. But, yeah, that is something. I do like black and white comics.
One, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Gilbert especially does stuff that's a little more open.
Yeah, yeah.
And that book that you loaned me, that one, it was like basically like a reminiscence of the 60s. I can't remember the name of it. My Gilbert.
Oh, Marvel Season.
That was a great book, and it was in color, I believe. And then it wasn't it in color?
No, it was in black and white.
Was it in black and white? I thought it was in color, because the colors were very open on that. That's why I thought it was in black and white.
The covers were in color. Well, to me, that's something on the strength of an artist, is if they can do a black and white book and you remember it in color.
Yeah, because it was
strength.
So open.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of like Sloth that we talked about. That's very open, but, you know, that one had more of a design element. But the one, the Marvel Season or whatever, I thought it was in color because I just remember a lot of wide, like a big background, white panels or whatever.
Yeah.
But like you said, that's why the design works, because you needed those open panels because of all the other stuff that was going on. So, yeah.
I read something one time about, I can't remember, I can't remember the artist, but they said black and white doesn't mean the absence of color. A lot of times you see black and white work and you say, oh, I wish it was in color. And, I mean, that's valid sometimes. But there are some artists, Scott McCloud is the first person that comes to my mind. Scott McCloud in the 80s started doing a really nice comic book called Zot for Eclipse Comics. And it was 10 issues, and it was in color. And it was a book I really liked. It was pretty unique. And 10 issues, they finished it. And in the end of the book, in the letters page, he had the cover for supposedly the next issue, which wasn't going to come out. And it was interesting because Zot was always real bright primary colors, like Superman would be. And the 11th issue color, it was all browns and grays because the girl came back to her world and was kind of depressed. Well, Zot was a popular comic, and they eventually brought it back about a year later as a black and white book with color covers. And when I first heard it, I was a little disappointed, thinking, you know, so-so. I liked it better in black and white. And it was funny because in the letters page, somebody wrote that reading the book, they didn't miss the color at all. Well, the thing was, he knew how to use it. He didn't use a lot of shading or anything. What he did was he used full blacks. Black planes, black walls. And it really contrasted, and it seemed like it was in color. Paul Grist is another one. His early work for Kane, and I think the first 12 issues of Jack Staff were all in black and white, and it's nice. He understands how to use black and white. And Stan Sakai's Usagi Yojimbo was always a black and white comic. But I think Mirage, when they had a publishing arm, they did Usagi Yojimbo. I think they did 15 issues, and it was in beautiful color. I really liked it. But some people were saying they liked it better in black and white. And then when he went to Dark Horse, it came back as a black and white comic because that's what he prefers. Again, I read that. It's nice in color. It's still great in black and white. I don't miss it at all.
Now, you know, I have a lot of those Showcase and Essential Marvels, you know, the Showcase, which is the DC, which are basically the four-color comics reprinted in black and white. I got to say, though, for the most part, with some exceptions, to me, that art still works in black and white, believe it or not. The Kirby stuff does, the Gene Colan especially. You know, all of it, those guys are such, you know, great artists. That, because they were doing, you know, the original art, it still stuck out. I mean, it works. I think it works in color. Some people don't buy it because they like them in color, because I guess that's the way they remember them, and it's a superhero book, and they want it to pop a little more or whatever. But those seem to work for me. You know, I have no problems, like, you know, getting enjoyment out of them. So, I mean, it depends on the artist, you know, but in general, if you're doing, like, work for a black and white, like a creepy or near, you want to put, like, either a lot of blacks, or you want to put gray tones or duotone shading, or do something more, because it's going to just it's going to disappear, you know, into the background there. You're not going to get any pop out of it or anything. And sometimes colorists don't necessarily help the artwork, you know. And some of those essential books, I've seen a lot of beautiful art that was like kind of buried by whatever in different coloring. So you're going like, wow, this is really nice line work. It's too bad I never saw it before because, you know, they just did some color that just blocked it all out. But, hey, that's the way it goes, you know.
As we talked about, and I have done it since, I've always wanted to read all the issues of Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four. And Dallas had the Marvel Essentials, the first one for Fantastic Four. And I was a little disappointed at first that it was in black and white. But I read it, and it really sucked me in. I mean, again, I do think those are the world's greatest comics. And I enjoyed it, and then I started thinking, oh, I'm just going to get the Masterworks. So I got those. They're in color. It's really nice copies. And I enjoyed them, but what I started realizing was you noticed other things in black and white that you didn't notice in color.
Yep.
Like especially the issue where they went bankrupt and they had to do that movie for the Submariner and they went to Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
But there was one full page where it shows them in Hollywood and it has all the actors. You know, the Fantastic Four is walking and it's like on a lot and they have all these actors. And, you know, Jack Kirby drew everybody in there. It's a nice page in color. But you notice something completely different when you see it in black and white. And, I liked it so much that I ended up finding the first Essentials at Wilson's. I picked it up because I wanted a copy. I mean, again, you are right. That is something that works. I've got a lot of those Marvel Essentials, well, several of them, and DC had Showcase, which was the black and white work. It is nice. I guess to me, if it was originally meant to be in color, it kind of loses something when it's not.
I tell you, though, if you want to learn, like, comic book inking, and if you want to really learn the art of it, man, some of those books, you'll see some of the, especially like Kirby Sinnott, you see the beautiful Joe Sinnott inking over Kirby, you go, man, this guy had like one of those most tremendous command of the brush, because that line work is just pristine, man. It's just like giving Kirby like a look that like classy, you know, it was like real Kirby's kind of rough, you know, and tumble, but, you know, Sinnott knew how to keep the power, but make it look like really illustrative, you know, you'd be really like, I suggest that if you wanted to, like, learn how to, you know, comic books are done, some of those Kirby Sinnott Fantastic Fours are a really great place to see the actual detail and the way to, you know, draw and lay out a comic book, definitely.
Yeah, great team. They were great.
I tell you, though, here's an artist whose work, I mean, it worked great in color, but who's definitely... Whose work was always made for black and white. It's freaking Alex Toth, man. It's like, sometimes when you see a color book, you're like, yeah, that's nice, but, you know, I kind of want to see them black and white, you know what I mean? I don't know why, you know, he's like, he strikes that nerve because there's such a design element to it, and there's so much, like, you know, stuff going on that you just want to, it was meant for black and white. Not to say it doesn't work in color.
Yeah.
Because obviously it does, but it was definitely meant for black and white.
I do agree with you. I've seen it in color, and I've liked it. Sometimes it reminds me a little bit of Mike Mignola, the way the color traps his work. So, you know, Mike Mignola works in heavy blacks.
Yeah, obviously.
And
the other way around, Mike Mignola is like her toast, but yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what I mean. That's why when I see Alex Toth's work in color, it reminds me of Hellboy a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But yeah, I do love Alex Toth in black and white, and the color's not really necessary.
Yeah, Alex Toth's work is a little more freewheeling than Mignola. Mignola seems to be really thoughtful and really thought out in his layout and his design, whereas you can see Toth just have a little bit of fun with it, a little bit more fun with it, but I enjoy both guys' works.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, they're different artists. I didn't mean it that way. The way the approach is going. Some people hate it, but it's never always bothered me too much. His work is done for black and white. When I'm saying this, I'm thinking of Bernie Wrightson's work for Warren Magazine.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Pacific Comics is putting out a series, I think it was 5 issues, is Bernie Wrightson, Master of the Macabre. Again, if it's Bernie Wrightson, I'm going to get it.
Those are all in color, though. That took a little bit out of
it. Yeah, see, I've heard people say that, but... That was the first time I read Jennifer was in that book. I didn't read the Warrens. And it's kind of neat. I like them in black and white. Of course, you know, the work was done at a larger scale. But I still enjoyed it, even though sometimes the colors kind of made the shading he did look kind of muddy.
Yeah,
exactly. Nevertheless, I still loved it. Some of Jaime Hernandez's work, Fantagraphics colored, you know, shrunk it down to comic size and colored it. And again, I still enjoyed it.
Jeff Jones's comic book work, not his painting, his comic book work, was always meant for black and white. I mean, he did have elements. He did leave it open for color, but it was just so strongly designed that it was meant for black and white. You know, there were a lot of those guys were Kaluta, Jones, Wrightson, you know, they were all very much influenced by the 50s, by, you know, Frazetta and EC and all that stuff. So they were basically like, kind of like, imitating that, changing it around, because they also other artists influenced them, and all their work still works. All their stuff still works in black and white, because that's what they were kind of aiming for. Color was just like, I don't know, secondary in some of those books. Kirby would be the opposite. Kirby like worked best in color, regardless of whether or not these books are still nice in black and white. But Kirby Chick Stone in black and white, it's great, but it's not as great as it is in color.
Yeah, I do agree.
So anyway.
Well, that topic exhausted itself.
Yeah, so we're kind of exhausted too. We need to get some fuel.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, thanks for listening to the episode. If you get a chance and you listen to us through iTunes, please give us a rating or give us a review. It's even better. And the best way to tell people about the show is word of mouth. And thank you for everybody who's done it. We've been getting a lot of downloads. Anything else?
Go out and get some free comics today.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this show will be a week later, but hopefully you got some free comics.
Yeah, if not, there's always next year. Anyway, that's it. And in the meantime,
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!